This is an Enterprise Time Security Podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with Mark Wall from the Provident Financial Group.
Hi. Provident Financial Group is a financial services organisation. We serve the underserved market in the UK. So that's people that with either a poor or no credit history. We help them attain a credit history by lending to them. We have three branches. We have the Consumer Credit Division, which is based in Bradford, which is your traditional doorstep lender. We have Money Barn, which is a car loan company, which is typically a second or third car rather than a first car. And we have Vanquis Bank, who are a credit card and loan provider.
That means you have an awful lot, therefore, sensitive data on people. How challenging is the cybersecurity situation for you at the moment?
Any other word other than very would be misleading. I've been in this industry a long time, and the attitude to security, specifically cybersecurity, in the last 4 to 5 years has changed considerably. We see a lot of people talking about how do you get the message across in the boardroom. And I don't think the message is difficult to get across in the boardroom anymore. I think if you're a member of a bank's board and you don't know about cybersecurity, you shouldn't be a member of that bank's board. But them understanding it is one thing. Them wanting to do something about it is the challenge that I think we have. Because it's typically, I need to spend money so something doesn't happen. So there's no return on that investment other than bad things won't happen. Is my success in that we didn't get hacked today, so therefore that was a good investment, or did we not get attacked today and that's why we weren't hacked today? You're right, we hold an awful lot of data on people, a huge amount of records, over 53 million records, and it's my responsibility to keep that safe. The insider threat, we talk about that all the time, have done for the last 30 years, and it's still our biggest area of concern. I think more now the accidental disclosure rather than the malicious disclosure. We are connected, technology falling off me, as do most people that arrive at work. So how do we keep that data safe from phones with cameras in, from iPads, from Samsung pads, and all this technology we want to embrace and we want people to use, we want our customers to use, and then someone like me comes along and says, yes, but you can't have it in your call centre. So the challenges, the same challenges everybody faces. I think being financial services, I've worked in the telecoms industry and utilities industry, and I found the security requirements there stricter than those in banking.
Is there a reason for that?
I think it's because telecoms specifically, your customers are your income. Keeping their details confidential, keeping them private, their billing, for example, very sensitive issue. You don't want people knowing who you phone or what you phone or who you text, what websites you visit. All of that in a mobile device, all of that collected and put in systems, that's what you need to keep safe. A breach of that type, as we saw at TalkTalk, takes a while to get over. Everybody gets over them, but it takes a while to get over them. Breaches happen every single day. We've become numb to them. I think the days of a breach will finish a company are over. And again, TalkTalk is a great example of that. They've recovered 100%. Their share price is back above what it was before the incident. That's a sad indictment of the fact, okay, we accept we are going to have breaches and we are going to have big breaches. I don't think it's because people don't care anymore. I received one from Radisson Hotels the other day. My details have been hacked as part of a data breach they've had. My name, telephone number, no credit card details, no bank details, but I've noticed an uplifting calls to my mobile number from PPI people and banks like our own offering me credit. So yeah, that's had an impact on me personally. What are Radisson going to do about it? It's probably the fourth one I've been involved in.
How do you balance off the accuracy? Because you're holding all this data and you're using that in order to make assessments on people. Meanwhile, if we look at the amount of data stolen and the way people are putting together profiles on the dark web, their data is probably as accurate in many cases as the data you hold. So when you're trying to do an assessment on somebody, as well as maintaining that data, how do you keep the accuracy of your data such that you can spot any indication of a potential fraud?
In my organisation as the CISO, I have a data governance manager. So it's quite unusual for data governance to sit inside security. It normally sits in the governance area. And that's because we see the quality, the accuracy and the timeliness of the data to our business is very, very important. Out-of-date data, you're marking to the wrong people. That's a breach of GDPR. Inaccurate information, that's a breach of GDPR. So this threat of a large fine, 4% of our global annual turnover, that's going to be a big number to any organisation that's got 2 million customers. We keep it accurate because we make the business responsible for it. So if you're the marketing director and you're marketing to people, you have to keep your data accurate. I will keep it safe. So I will look after the integrity of it. So what you put in will stay as what it was put in as, but you need to make sure what you've put in is accurate.
And that's interesting, because a couple of years ago I spoke to Experian on this issue of data accuracy. And one of the things they were saying is that companies come to them, particularly for a marketing campaign, to validate data. And they find that on average, most companies on engagement are maybe 30, 40% accurate. Some, the very lucky ones, are around 60. But people will invest amount of money and then they take a risk value. We'll get to 60% or 70% accurate, but it's going to cost too much to get any further. You're saying that from your perspective, you have to be at that 100%. How hard is it to maintain that?
We take an Experian download once a month and we do a comparison to the previous month's data. And so we know where data has changed. We also know where data has changed when customers contact us to change it. And that's one of the very few interactions that we have with our customers is they'll phone in, we'll run them through their data protection checks and they'll say, my telephone number's changed or I'm moving home. I don't think we're at the 100% threshold. That's an aspirational figure to be 100% accurate. I think we are probably in the high 80% though. Financial services will have to be. As you said earlier, it's important to people that you get their information right. We will impact their lives considerably if we get it wrong.
Where are your biggest risks coming from?
It sounds cliche, but it is the internal threat. It's the accidental disclosure of information. It's clicking that link in an email that you shouldn't click in the email. It's that traditional, somebody wants what we have and they're going to do everything they can to get it. We have invested a lot in security in the bank in the last 2 years, a considerable figure, which I'm very happy that the board are doing. We're only just learning now to use that technology properly. And we are discovering we have issues where we didn't think we would have issues. And that, again, is around mistakes people make rather than malicious activity. For example, we have a policy that anybody with administrator access also has a normal user account and they only log on to their administrator account when they need to do something as an administrator. Now, if you're logging on and off 30, 40 times a day, you eventually think, oh, I'm just going to stay logged on as the administrator. Or you forget you're logged on as an administrator and you do something and it impacts one of the servers rather than just the piece of work you're working on. Those sorts of problems that we have.
But you must be connected to partners. So how do you secure that supply chain? Because if we look around, that supply chain, those partners, those customers, they may not have the same standards as you. They may not have the same controls as you. Yet you're sharing data, you're taking data from them. And now we're all responsible for data, no matter where it comes from.
I have a small team in the security department and that's our third party vendor manager. And his sole function in life is to visit every single what we term tier one supplier. A tier one supplier to us is anybody that has customer or colleague data. And we visit every single one of them every 12 months. Obviously, we don't visit the likes of Experian. We trust them to have adequate security in place. But we deal a lot with debt collection agencies. We visit every single one of those. We ask them where they keep their laptops. Do they use USB? We give them a copy of our acceptable use policy and our information security policy, and we ask them to be as compliant to that as they can be with their own policy. The same as or better is the phrase we use. You need to be the same as this or better than this. And most of them are quite happy to comply. And we do check it. We ask for evidence of. So we'll send them a questionnaire. We'll ask, do you have an information security policy? When was it last reviewed? And can you send us a copy of it? A lot of companies say, no, but you can see it. So come to us and we'll show it to you. So yeah, we jump on the train, hop in the car, go read their policy and make sure they have reviewed it in the last 12 months like they told us they did. Yeah, supply chain management for us, we take very seriously. As I say, we deal a lot with debt collection agencies and marketing agencies. It's particularly important for us to make sure that once it's left us, what arrives at them is what we sent them, and what they do with it is what we've asked them to do with it, not what they think they should.
How easy is recruitment at the moment for you? Because this is a very pressured market and it's very easy to spend a lot of money trying to buy people in, but not necessarily get the people you need.
It's very difficult. I'm very disappointed with ourselves as an industry. I think we have become lazy in the past 4 to 5 years and greedy. If I'm recruiting someone that is going to be a junior investigator, maybe 3-4 years experience in London, you're probably looking to pay £50,000 to £60,000. 4 years ago, that was a £30,000 to £40,000 job. Because security, and it's particularly cyber, if it's got the word cyber in it, let's add 15 grand to it. I've just put a voluntary recruitment freeze in place because the quality of people we were getting through from the agencies we use was poor. I find recruiting people in November, December particularly disappointing. Nobody wants to move jobs around this time of year. One of those is a senior post. I'm recruiting a CISO for the bank. And again, the people that label themselves CISO with 5 years experience, you think, you do know what those letters stand for. Disappointing. I think we need to do something about it.
If you can't get the quality of people, how do you then start to look for better people?
I'd prefer to grow the right people. The government's recent apprenticeship scheme is a fantastic idea. I can build a security person better than I can source one. So if somebody comes to us out of school with a reasonable level of education, read, write, arithmetic, etc., then we can train them to be a good security person. We can give them the CISP and the CISMs and put them on all the courses. But to me, you grow a security person. You don't educate it into them. You train it into them.
One of the things that surprises me is there's a lack of emphasis on problem solving. I come from a military environment where problem solving is part of your day-to-day life. How much of a struggle is it to find people who have basic problem solving skills today that you can then begin to build on?
It's difficult to find people with problem solving skills because we tend to I've got a 12-year-old daughter and a 15-year-old son, and my wife does everything for them. As I mentioned earlier, my son is a police cadet, and he came home and said, "I got in trouble because you didn't clean my boots, Dad." I think we spoil people, we do too much for them, so we are taking away their ability to solve their own problems. I'm old-fashioned in that I make him solve his own problems, and as I said to you, he solved the problem not by cleaning the boots, but buying another pair, so that he's always got a pair that he wears only for cadets, and the other pair he wears when we go out doing what we do in the mud and the forest at the back of the house. But, okay, he's solved the problem, but not how I would have solved it. I'd have cleaned the boots. He's bought a second pair. Problem-solving skills in security people are essential. When you look at the people we are up against, I think people forget the O in SOC stands for organised. It's serious, it's organised, and it's criminal activity. We have to get it right every time. They only have to get it right once.
But how do we get that right? If we look around some of the papers we've had published, the GAO in the United States looked at connected cars, and one of the pieces it looked at was the issue of attacks over the air. And the general consensus from many of the car manufacturers was it was too expensive, it was too complicated, and people didn't have the skills. It took months before the whole thing was cracked, because the bad guys, they're quite happy to just share skills, work together, just for credit to say they had a hand in this. On our side of the fence, it's not so easy. Regulation gets in the way. Compliance gets in the way. How do we improve our ability to be that organised in order to combat?
I wouldn't say that regulation gets in the way. I guess I'm probably in a small number of people that I find our regulator helps us in security. They give us the means to go back into our business and say, the regulator says we need to do this. This is how we're going to achieve it. And that's the price tag that comes with that version of it. Again, we do the old-fashioned Lada, Sierra, how old I am, Ford Sierra version or the Rolls-Royce version. Let's go middle of the road. What is the threat? Am I spending £5 million to get rid of a £1 million problem? Well, no, because that would be ridiculous. I'll spend a couple of £100,000 fixing a £1 million problem, maybe. Compliance assists us in that. It's that time of year now. I've got to do a Swift attestation. I've got to attestation to the FCA, we've got to do one for PSD2, and these things make me look back at the work we've done in security for the year and think, did we do the right things? Are we auditing at the right level? Are we asking the right questions of the business? Are we asking the right questions of ourselves? The regulations and the compliance requirements help with that.
If we look forward over the next 18 months, let's say, what are the things that worry you the most?
It's that big data loss. It's the accidental damage we could do to a data set. People don't have to steal data to damage a company. They can change it, and that would damage us just as much. If somebody got into our credit and rating system, for example, and changed the card rates by just one percentage point, that would have a huge impact on our business. There aren't many events that we wouldn't recover from. Maybe that would be one of those terminal events.
Thank you for your time today.
No problem at all. My pleasure.